Member Week is back at Lowe's with big savings for pros. Now through October 15th, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, building materials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings before they're gone. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. I'm joined now by Tim Price, Partner and Director of Investment at PFP Wealth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're going to kick off by looking at the Bund. You know, this is the this risk-free asset, which has lost 33% of its value in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, this is the longer-dated German government bond, 2.5% maturing in 2046. And as you say, it's fallen by price, roughly 33% as of midweek over the last 2 to 3 weeks. There may have been a move of this magnitude before in the German government market, but I doubt it. The last time I've seen anything remotely like this was as a relatively young bond salesman in 94, when the Fed hiked rates somewhat surprisingly, and you had a collapse in bond markets, but it was relatively short-lived. But this, I suspect, is a bigger deal this time around, because it strikes me that we're at that sort of potentially at that turning point in the whole rate cycle, not just in the Eurozone, but across the West.
So what triggered this? What triggered this from this peak?
How long is a piece of string? I mean, you could argue that the market should have seen this coming, because QE has, across the board, been consistent with rising bond yields, not falling bond yields. Yeah. In other words, you know, markets, in their inimitable way, try and price in the future. So, you know, they sort of buy the rumor, sell the fact. We all know that, you know, Draghi's buying 60 billion euros a month of this stuff, assuming he can even find it. And I think that some people have raised the concern that there aren't enough bunts to go around. So, yeah.
I mean, is there an element of co-integration of US and European bond yields going on here, with the kind of covered interest rate parity hypothesis?
I mean, that could be the case, but if you look at, anticipated monetary policy, they're clearly way out of sync. Yep. Because the market's now anticipating, and has been sort of waiting for sort of, you know, tightening to come in the States for months now, and the taper tantrum occurred last year. And so that, you know, Yellen is really kind of boxed into a corner, Janet Yellen at the Fed, in a sort of will they, won't they do anything, and the economic figures come in better or worse, but they're clearly frozen. But the next move in US rates surely has to be up. Whereas, you know, as we know in the Eurozone, I mean, a lot of that market in bond market terms now is now trading on a negative yield, and they're still doing QE. So yeah, something is not right in that market.
Well, the biggest question I want to ask is, I mean, the guests have come and gone this week talking about the collapse in bonds and relating it to everything else apart from bonds. You know, the bonds will collapse and that'll lead to the stock market collapsing, and that'll lead to this happening and that happening. Is that the case?
Well, who knows? I mean, I think this is the real danger of what happens when central banks mess around with the so-called risk-free rate. It has, you know, these actions have consequences, and I don't think anybody knows for sure what it's going to be. But what I am interested in is the idea that potentially either it's in a deflationary collapse, or it's else in just sort of complete carnage in the market, that you get both bond and stock markets moving in sync. And I think because there's so much money now invested in these markets, irrespective of valuation, that risk has to be a live one.
Couldn't it be the case that, for instance, people are getting out of bonds and going into stocks?
They could be rotating out, for sure.
Hence the S&P hitting a new high. Yesterday we had all the conversations were bond crash, and stock market crash, or leading into a stock market crash. The bunds go down and then the DAX goes down, and lo and behold, you know, that by the end of close of play yesterday, markets at a new high. So that relationship is wrong.
All I'm saying is the risk has to be there that they will move in sync. I don't dispute the fact there may well be rotation going on, but from our perspective, the value isn't in European markets anyway, it's in Asia, which we'll touch on in a sec. Right.
Okay. Well, if we move on to the next slide, we're looking at this, the Warren Buffett Index.
Yeah, so this is a number of times when the name Warren Buffett's been mentioned in the Wall Street Journal. I'm not sure if there's necessarily too much we can read into this, other than the fact that it's a sort of subjective assessment on the part of the Wall Street Journal editorial team. But the thing I do find amusing about this is I'm pretty sure if you roll back the clock, Buffett's best returns at Berkshire Hathaway all come in the early part of this period. So all the time that he's been front and center, yeah, you know, yeah. The problem with value investing is that the tree doesn't grow to the sky. In exactly the same way that the Magellan Fund in the States, Fidelity's sort of benchmark fund, got to something outrageous like $150 billion. It was bigger than the market and it couldn't grow anymore. I think you're going to see similar issues over performance for Berkshire Hathaway. Not to take away Warren Buffett's track record, but clearly, I mean, he's getting a lot of airplay now, but the time to buy it was down here, not over there.
It's also the case that it's much easier to be an investor when you've got the cloak of anonymity rather than, you know that he's buying into IBM, so everybody in town.
Yeah, he can't
Everybody buys into IBM, and it actually just destroys the trade.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he trades against himself every time he lifts up the phone, so it's a problem for him. Again, size does tend to be, as he said, to be fair, size is an anchor to performance.
It's like a reverse chart of reversion to mean, isn't it? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Moving on to the last slide, looking at these are kind of like the gap year economies.
Yeah, so this is, I mean, we love the Asian markets full stop from an equity perspective. We think, you know, the fundamentals for Asia are so much more attractive than anywhere else in the world. Likely economic growth is going to be better than the West. Demographics are better. There are younger population. There's a much less developed welfare state. The banking system's healthier. So it's kind of like what's not to like. This is a chart of equity market cap to GDP. And as you can see, the one real standout in Asia, which is a frontier market, is Vietnam. So we're looking at a few sort of boutique fund offerings, and I'm sure they're going to be attractive. Again, it's that it kind of like that value story all over again. Size is a barrier to performance, so a lot of the big boys will try and get into markets like Vietnam, but they'll be too big. They won't be able to get in, but the smaller, nimbler managers hopefully will be able to. And I think Vietnam's only sort of in the process of sort of liberalizing its market, so this has been sort of verboten for a while. But if you look at just on a comparative basis, clearly some of these markets are developed. Singapore, I'm not even sure Japan's on there, but again, if Japan were there, it'd be much higher up the list. But buying this kind of market at such a discount comparative to the rest of the sector, it looks hugely attractive to us.
Is Vietnam isolated from, like, if you look at like Indonesia, maybe Thailand, Malaysia, you've got such high dollar-denominated debts. Well, they have they've got such high balance payment overhangs. Mm. Is Vietnam kind of sheltered a bit more from that?
I think it might be. Again, it's much more of a sort of frontier, you know, situation. So it's not Wild West frontier, but I think it's clearly an undeveloped and overlooked market. And I'm sure that it's going to be a market to follow for the next few years.
Well, Tim Price, partner and director of investment at PFP Wealth, thank you very much for that. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks.
We're done with the finance show for today, but straight after the break, we're talking to Nigel Seeley, David Bick, Angus Lockham, and Tobin Dimmock for our sports show. So don't go anywhere.